You're about to listen to a BBC podcast, and I'd like to tell you a bit about the podcasts I work on. I'm Dan Clark, and I commission factual podcasts at the BBC. It's a massive area, but I'd sum it up as stories to help us make sense of the forces shaping the world. What podcasting does is give us the space and the time to take brilliant BBC journalism and tell amazing, compelling stories that really get behind the headlines. And what I get really excited about is when we find a way of drawing you into a subject you might not even have thought you were interested in. Whether it's investigations, science, tech, politics, culture, true crime, the environment, you can always discover more with a podcast on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, it's Anna Hill here with the Farming Today podcast, where farmers are urged to take on seaweed-eating sheep of North Ronaldsay to save the species. Why the arrival of blue tongue disease is a serious issue for affected farms, and why drones could soon be used to squirt insect-eating worms over pine forests.
You can see how this quickly gets above the tree. And of course, then you've got gravity and four very big fans helping the nematodes get right in amongst all the bugs.
We'll hear more about that a little later. First, all week we're looking at rare breeds. The North Ronaldsay are one of the UK's oldest and rarest breeds of sheep. They're shaggy and small and can often be found grazing on seaweed along the coast of the northernmost of the Orkney Islands, which they're named after. But more recently, some farmers on the UK mainland have been taking to keeping the breed. North Ronaldsays are listed as a priority by the Rare Breed Survival Trust. Bob Hockenhull visited a farmer near Lincoln who's encouraging more people to think about establishing their own flocks of the animal.
It's feeding time for Nick Dowler's small flock of North Ronaldsay sheep. He keeps 43 on his land at Potter Hanworth in Lincolnshire. As chairman of the North Ronaldsay Sheep Fellowship, Nick's all too aware of the need to encourage more farmers to think about keeping the breed because it's so rare.
They have all the characteristics you'd expect from a primitive breed. So they're slim, very lean meat if you are that way inclined, and the wool is excellent. They're quite easy to look after in that they're not picky. They will eat any vegetation, even brambles, which I wouldn't like to chew on myself. Very hardy, can cope with most weathers. They never go inside at all. They lamb almost unaided. I can count the number on one hand of interventions that's been necessary in the last 10 to 12 years.
So how come some of them have ended up here in Lincolnshire?
Back in the early 70s, people said, well, hang on a minute, the whole population of North Ronaldsay sheep is on the island of North Ronaldsay. What happens if foot and mouth were to strike the island? A whole lot would be wiped out and that would be the end of them. And so it was put forward the idea that perhaps we should bring a few to the mainland as a security precaution, just to make sure, you know, we've got some for the future if anything should go wrong on the island. And a lot of people are asking, well, what do you want to keep an old breed like that going for? Well, we've discovered recently that some of the traits of the North Ronaldsay sheep might be useful to us. For example, the carbon footprint of the North Ronaldsay sheep is much less than the average sheep because of their seaweed diet.
And how rare are they?
They are still pretty rare. On the mainland, there's probably around 400. Difficult to be accurate in this, and on the island itself probably between 2,000 and 3,000. On mainland Britain we have members from the north of Scotland to the south of Cornwall, but they're very sparsely spaced.
And you would like more farmers to perhaps have a go at keeping these sheep, wouldn't you?
I think so, yes. I mean, I wouldn't suggest if you are a commercial farmer you dive in there and buy hundreds. That would not work. But like me, I keep my commercial flock, but I also have the rare breeds as almost a hobby aspect to sheep farming, and they're extremely interesting. Well, lots more personality than your standard blue Texel, for example.
Nick's daughter, Tegan, also has a passion for the North Ronaldsay breed, helping her dad run the fellowship as well as keeping a few sheep herself.
How confident are you the breed will survive and not die out?
I don't think there's a big future for them in commercial flocks, just because there isn't as much money in them and there's not as much meat on the sheep as there are for the big commercial flocks. However, they're really good for areas of poorer grazing. They'll eat everything. So for smallholders, I think they're really good. Because of their size, they can put them on small plots of land.
The genetics of the North Ronaldsays has recently been tested by the Rare Breed Survival Trust on the Orkneys. The Wear fears they'd interbred with other breeds on the island, putting their small population at greater risk of dying out.
And the results have come out, and luckily, the sheep are still pretty pure genetically. So if required, we can take rams from the island to boost the genetic qualities of those on the mainland.
Nick Dowler ending that report by Bob Hockenhull. Now, as we mentioned last week, the animal disease blue tongue has arrived in England. There are now 11 cases of the disease on 6 different premises in Kent and Norfolk. It affects cattle, sheep and goats, but cannot be contracted by people or get into the food chain. There are restrictions on moving animals in the protection zones, and farmers say it's difficult to find abattoirs to process their animals within those zones. Blue tongue is transmitted to animals by biting midges and cannot be passed between animals without the midge vector. 16 years ago, France, Holland and Germany had devastating losses of sheep due to the disease, and a vaccination programme was then implemented across Great Britain. The last cases in the UK were in 2007, and it's been considered blue tongue free since 2011. Norfolk beef farmer Roger Long was the NFU's vice chair of the East Anglia Livestock Board during the last outbreak.
To go over there where French farmers were very keen to show us exactly what was happening over there was a bit mind-blowing. And what we were seeing, the suffering, the extent of the swelling that the blue tongue had got, the swelling of the feet, it was very, very serious. And now what we're seeing and what's coming over from Holland, the Dutch are really, really suffering. And I think we should be prepared, bearing in mind we've got a few cases in a non-midgy time.
Are we vaccinating against blue tongue at the moment?
We did last time, but we do not have a vaccine available for this strain. Although I do understand that some of these firms are now trying to pull a finger out and get something sorted. But we badly need it here for the spring to try and combat what could be coming next year.
Farmers now seem to be mainly concerned about the restriction of movement on their animals if they're in a restricted zone. How much does that affect a farmer?
Oh, God, enormously. You know, we're not knowing what's happening, really. It's the uncertainty of it all. In the Cantley area, they've got a 10K restriction zone. 10K is a big, big area. And there are a lot of cattle in that area, a lot of big finishers, a lot of big breeders with both cattle and sheep up there. They're now talking about coming to test all the animals within a 3K zone. We're getting a shortage of vets, that's the other thing, to have people to deal with these problems. And it is very, very concerning. And just desperately trying to get abattoirs who will take these animals.
And so does that mean these animals are backing up and not able to...
Well, one of the big problems, like down in Kent, I know one of the people down there who has got infected animals, he fattens bulls. Now, when these bulls go over 16 months of age, they become worth a hell of a lot less. Not only are they getting bigger, they're costing more and they're getting worth less. And he is in a horrible situation. Until we get an abattoir that can take them.
You deal with a lot of beef farmers. Do you know the farm that's affected?
Well, he's traumatised, really. A very close friend of ours. And it's been a very, very difficult week for him. He's not knowing which way to turn. And having a valuer and a slaughterman turn up the other morning was a bit traumatic for him. But they're coping. They are good Norfolk farming people, so they will cope.
And how many animals have had to be put down there?
He's had 2 so far, but they tested positive. But there was nothing particularly wrong with them. They had no signs of ill health. They didn't have swollen tongues. But it is the way forward. We have to eradicate this terrible disease because We do not want the suffering which I saw in France in 2007.
Farmer Roger Long, or DEFRA, confirmed that there are no authorised vaccines for the current strain of blue tongue in the UK, and there are no current plans for mandatory vaccines. Next year could see drones being used for the first time to drop microscopic worms on trees to protect them and us from two harmful insects. The worms, or nematodes, are natural predators of two damaging insects, one of which kills pine trees and the other which can cause allergic reactions in humans. The nematodes attack the insects and eat them from the inside out. Sarah Falkingham has been to find out more.
I'm just walking through a small piece of woodland in East Yorkshire with Dr. Richard Binks, who's an entomologist from Coppet, the largest manufacturer in the world of nematodes. And it's in a woodland like this that you might find oak processionary moth and also pine weevil. What is a nematode? How's it made and how does it kill pests?
So nematodes are parasitic and they parasitise insects by entering the body of an insect larvae or caterpillar and then releasing a deadly bacteria into the gut of that insect, killing it pretty instantly. They then breed within the actual dead insect larvae and then burst out and then move on to the next insect to infect.
And pine weevil particularly is a huge problem that at the moment is controlled with some nematodes sprayed by water cannon, but there are problems, aren't there?
There are big problems at the moment because primarily we can't get the machinery or the forest forwarders, which are used by the foresters, to get into really difficult areas, particularly mountainous regions in places like Scotland. That's really, really, really difficult, and that's why we're looking at new technology into these areas.
Pine weevil is a problem for trees, but there's another insect, oak processionary moth, where the caterpillar drops the hairs down and humans can get covered in it and dogs, and it causes a rash. It's more of a problem in the south of England. How could a drone in the future using nematodes control that compared to how we're doing it now?
And it's all to do with access, really, because at the end of the day, we can only spray chemicals so far up a tree, but by using the drone technology we'll be able to get further up the tree canopy and be able to hit the target a lot more effectively.
Excellent, all good. My name's Robert Pearson, I'm from Auto Spray Systems, and we're the only holders of an agricultural spraying and spreading drone license in the country at the moment. What we're just about to do is demonstrate how the drone can get up above the trees so much easier than a man can. So that noise is the drone taking off. It's 3 metres, weighs about 100 kilos and contains 50 litres of nematodes. And you can see how this quickly gets above the tree. And of course, then you've got gravity and four very big fans helping the nematodes get right in amongst all the bugs.
The state-run Forestry Commission have been early adopters of drone technology. They have over 20 drone pilots using them for seeding, mapping and identifying areas for treatment. Spraying nematodes will be decided next year, but it's timely because the insecticide currently used on things like pine weevil could end soon, so a biological alternative is needed. Dr. Roger Moore is from Forest Research, the principal organisation for tree research in Great Britain.
Well, I mean, at the moment, the loss of the current insecticides would be absolutely devastating for the forest industry. Insecticides such as acetamiprid are still by far the most effective method for protecting trees. We anticipate, if we lose insecticides, that the vast majority of forestry restock sites would lose between 50 and 100% of the trees planted, depending on when planting took place.
A real alternative is needed then.
It's a priority for the forest industry to investigate alternatives to the use of chemicals. We're putting a lot of emphasis on that at the moment.
Dr. Roger Moore from Forest Research. That's all from us today. I'm Anna Hill. The studio manager in Bristol was Caitlin Gaisley, and the producer was Rebecca Rooney.